This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got three absolutely tremendous hours for you, and we're going to introduce the guests in a second because right now this is wild and this is crazy what we've got in terms of Pacers versus Thunder. We've got 45 seconds remaining. The Pacers are currently trailing by 1 point. They're going to be letting this one play out. They're going to try to be able to get the ball back. And this is a Pacers 10-2 bonsai charge here in the last 2 minutes to be able to pull within a point. We've got 23 seconds remaining. Everything is currently off the board and everything is going to be riding on this final possession as the Pacers, it looks like they try to rescue the ball. Is this going to be going their way or is this going to be going away the OKC Thunder? We are most likely going to have a review with 22 and a half seconds remaining. As we get that review, how about if we actually set up the show? Because, yep, this is very wild to say the least as we've got ourselves a trio of really good guests that are going to be coming up. We're going to be talking some college baseball. We're certainly going to be recapping this game, and we're going to be having a whole bunch of fun as we're going to talk a little baseball in hour number two. Rob Donaldson does great work with the show slash podcast, Rob's Best Bets. We're going to be talking a little hockey as well in about 30 minutes. Zach Phillips, he does great work with taking a look at everything in terms of the Toronto Maple Leafs and so much more over at Leafs Nation. He's going to be joining me. We're going to be taking a look at what to expect from Game 2 of the Cup Final. And then in hour number 3, we're going to be talking about some college baseball with Kobe Dant. He does absolutely tremendous job over at the Sports Gambling Podcast. I work with the show, The College Experience. So that sets you up right there. Now let's dive into what we've got right now in terms of this game. And this is Greg Oops Peterson, by the way. So in case you were wondering who's hosting tonight, there you go. But that said, 22 and a half seconds remaining. It looked like the Indiana Pacers were dead and buried, and that is not the case anymore. Right now with the Indiana Pacers, they have taken a full timeout. They're right now reviewing whose ball this is going to be coming out of the timeout. 110 to 109 is the score, and this has been just an absolute, I don't know if we can call it a total replay of what we saw in game number one between the Pacers and the New York Knicks, because in that game, the Pacers were down much more in the final minute, but and this has been a surge. And the man that has really kept the Pacers afloat tonight, Obi Toppin, off the bench. 5 made threes, 17 points. He has come up clutch. Like, Darius Halliburton has been able to put up some numbers, but I mean, the scoring hasn't necessarily been there for him. He's been able to put up 12 points, and he's been able to do a nice job here moving forward, and this is a little bit of a surprise myself. Miles Turner in this stat line, 15 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 turnovers, and that has been the big thing for the Pacers. 25 turnovers to the 6 of the OKC Thunder. They are getting, they are losing the turnover battle by 19, and here they are right now in a review with a chance to perhaps be able to take the lead and be able to take this game one on the road. Now, if you took +9, +9.5 with the Pacers, you're just hoping that this thing does not go to overtime because you're feeling very good about this one. You're just hoping that somehow, some way, we don't get some tomfoolery that happens here. And it's been a wild game for the Thunder as well as it's been the Shea game. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 38 points. He has been tremendous, but supporting cast has been a little bit intermiss around him. You've had Chad Holmgren be able to give you 6 points, 6 rebounds. Alex Caruso off the bench has actually been able to give you a nice little shot in the arm. He's been able to supply 11 points, but right now, we've got ourselves just a very, very wild game, to say the least. And Pascal Siakam, in my opinion, it looked like the ball went off of him. Ooh, by the way, he's been able to have himself a nice game. 19 points, 11 rebounds, and it is indeed OKC basketball. 14 seconds left on the shot clock, 22.8 left on the game clock. So we're going to see what happens here. You've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with the ball, and he's going to hoist up a shot here. And this is one that it does not go. Rebound, Indiana Pacers. They've got it with 5 seconds remaining. They have a timeout in their back pocket. Are they going to use it? No, they are going to play this one out. They're going to take it at the buzzer, and it goes! 0.3 seconds remaining. Pacers have the lead. Tyrese Halliburton, he's not doing the choke like he did in game number one against the New York Knicks, but with 0.3 seconds remaining, he's got it. Now, they're probably going to review, try to see if this is going to go to 0.4 seconds, 0.5 seconds remaining, but This is going to be a classic catch-and-shoot situation for the OKC Thunder. Now, because they're only down by 1 point, this means that they can throw that baseball-style pass. They could try to get it as close as they want to the rim, try for a tip-in, something like that. But you're going to need to bust out everything that you practice in terms of your last-second situations with regards to this one. And I don't think that they're going to have too much time back on this clock. Maybe they push it back to 0.4 seconds, but you do have enough time to be able to catch and shoot if you're the OKC Thunder. But what a comeback this has been for the Indiana Pacers. Like, this team was completely buried. They were completely done in this game. At one point during the fourth quarter, they were down, I think, by a count of at the very minimum 11 points. If not, it was a little bit more. As a matter of fact, I think that they were down 14 at one point. But, I mean, my goodness, this is just wild. Right now, there's a timeout, so we'll reset here and let you know that First Bet, they've got you covered with regards to the final jewel of the Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes. It is going to be going down this weekend, and there's no better time to bet on the races than with First Bet. You're able to get a $200 sign-up bonus if you're a new user just by utilizing the promo code of VSIN200, VSIN200. Whether you're a seasoned horse player or new to the sport, First Bet has all the cool tools to elevate your game. Download the app or go to firstbet.com/VSIN. That is the number one, stbet.com/VSIN. That promo code VSIN200. That gets you a $200 bonus. As it is cashing out with myself, Greg Eubes Peterson, right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. And we've got ourselves 0.3 seconds remaining. They don't add any time back on the clock. The OKC Thunder, they're able to get this out of bounds over by their basket, so they're able to advance the ball. But right now, 0.3 seconds remaining, and they're going to call another timeout. The Pacers are going to set up their defense, so they're going to try to make sure that they do everything possible. And you are going to be able to get this total under unless you get something strange. Like, you would need a foul, and then you need the Oklahoma City Thunder to go 1 of 2 at the free throw line. So if you took the 230.5, 231.5, you should be safe there. If you have the OKC, or if you have the Indiana Pacers with the points, you should be very, very safe unless we really get something crazy that happens here. But can the OKC Thunder be able to stave off, be able to win this game number one, as they've led all night long? Like, I think that you might have had a Pacers lead early on in the first quarter. Like, I'm trying to scroll back to see if there was any point at all in which the Pacers led in this game, and I think there might have been like 1 point where it was tied up, but I ain't really past that. It has been all OKC Thunder, and this is what the Indiana Pacers have done all postseason long. And this is why, when I was on the show yesterday, you live bet the team that gets down double figures in these games. Like, that is the way that you play Indiana Pacers games here in the postseason. Indiana Pacers get down 10 points, you live bet them. The OKC Thunder get down 10 points, you live bet them. Like, that is the way that this postseason has been. If you've done absolutely nothing but close your eyes, put on a blindfold, and know, oh, this team is down double figures, I'm going to bet them. That's, if you've done nothing but that, you made money here in the NBA playoffs. That's how wild and crazy it has been. All right, so now the table is set, 0.3 seconds. OKC Thunder, they are unable to get a shot off. They tried to throw it at the basket. Indiana Pacers, they block it away. 111-110. Pacers, they pull out victory from the jaws of defeat, and they get the job done here in game number one. We are not going to be having a sweep in this series unless if the Pacers are the team that does that. And boy, if the Pacers pull off a sweep, that would really be something. But 1-0, Indiana Pacers take the lead in the series. Now, here's your big takeaway from this. The Indiana Pacers were absolutely nuclear from three-point range in this game. They go 18 of 39 from distance. That is a whopping 46.2% from three. And Obi Toppin, once again, he was the guy that, in my opinion, bailed out the Indiana Pacers. Yes, you did have Tyrese Haliburton be able to hit that late shot, but Tyrese Haliburton was honestly pretty pedestrian from an offensive standpoint. Still was getting the rebounds, still was getting the assists, but until that last shot that he had with 0.3 seconds remaining was a little bit muted there. But how about the emergence of Obi Toppin? He had 11 points in that game number 5 loss against the Knicks. He puts up 18 in that game 6 closeout. And here for the Indiana Pacers, which it warms my heart to be saying, Obi Toppin making a difference in the finals, because I'm a big college basketball guy. I absolutely love what he was able to do over at Dayton. But comes in off the bench, 17 points, 5 rebounds. And again, I think that this is the wildest set of all. The Indiana Pacers win this game, losing the turnover battle 24-6. They were out turnovered by 18 in this game, and they somehow, someway, find a way to be able to get the job done. And They get the job done, with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander legitimately giving a good game. It's not like the MVP did not show up in this game. 38 points, but who else is going to be able to step up for the OKC Thunder, be able to give you that effort? Lu Dort, he was able to throw in their 15 points in this one, but just a wild game, man. I am very curious to see where this game two opener is going to be with regards to this. We should be getting that momentarily. If we don't get it in this segment, we're going to hit a break, and then we're going to be able to get that to you. And as a matter of fact, DraftKings, they just came out with that opener. How about if we run it back? This was a closing number in a lot of places of 10. This was 9.5 when I was doing the show last night with the Oklahoma City Thunder laying the number in. Right now, OKC Thunder opening up 9.5-point favorites. Now, the total has come down. This is down to a 225.5, and as I was saying on the show yesterday, if I was looking at anything, and I did end up firing on this one prior to the game, I was liking the under. I just felt like it was going to be a little bit more of a feel-and-out process, but keep in mind, we got 221 points in this game. You had the Indiana Pacers turn the ball over 24 times. Now, again, with the Indiana Pacers, they also were just completely unconscious from three-point range. They shot over 45% from three-point range, so there's that aspect of things. But I'd be looking a little bit more at a bit more scoring in this one. The Indiana Pacers, they're clearly wanting to play tempo, and I don't think that they're going to be as sloppy as they were in this game. So we've got ourselves the Indiana Pacers leading this series by a count of 1-0. Man, just a wild, wild night in general in terms of the NBA. And how about just the finals in general? Like, we saw what we were able to get in overtime of the Stanley Cup final game number one. We're certainly going to be breaking down game number two, and we're going to be doing that in about 15 minutes. But we do have to unpack what we all saw here in Oklahoma City Thunder, in OKC, I should say, with the Thunder losing game number one. Additionally, we've got a baseball game in Pittsburgh that's in the top of the fifth inning. Boy, did they really want to get that game in tonight, and they did not want to have to try to travel for anything like that. So we'll touch upon that next right here on Cash It Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cash It Out here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. We have to unpack what we just saw out there in Oklahoma City. It is 111-110. The Pacers end up getting the job done, and right now we are seeing all sorts of movement in terms of the game number two opening line. When this originally opened up at DraftKings, I was seeing this at right around about a 9.5 with the Oklahoma City Thunder being a favorite, and total on the game was at a 225.5. Now it's moving up, down all around. It moved up to a 227.5, and now it's going back down to a 226.5. So right now the market is trying to set itself with regards to this game number two, but right now we are seeing the OKC Thunder as an 11-point favorite, and I can't unsee what I just saw. Like, the Indiana Pacers just lost a game, or just lost the turnover battle by 18 and won the game outright. How are they an 11-point underdog right now? And I recognize that this OKC Thunder team has been a machine all season long. This is an OKC Thunder team that really leads all of basketball with regards to the efficiency metrics and what have you. But this is a Pacers team that really, ever since Christmas, they were able to turn over a little bit of a new leaf. If you toss out the first few months of the NBA season, which, I mean, how much are we taking a look at wins and losses from October and November right now? This just feels off right now. So I do think that for the Indiana Pacers, they have a good chance to be able to cover here. I'm much more of an in-game better, but I mean, I might need to take a stab on this one because they're making me the grandfather offer that you can't refuse. And again, with this total at 227.5, I do think that we're going to get a little bit more scoring game number two. I just go back to what I just mentioned. The Indiana Pacers had 24 turnovers here in game number one. They're going to be a little bit more clean in game number two, and Rick Carlisle is a heck of a coach. He's been there, done that. He's actually won a title as a big underdog. Keep in mind what he's able to do with the Dallas Mavericks when they were facing off against the Miami Heat that first year with LeBron James and company. So, I mean, he has been in this situation before. This is a Pacers team that they just flat out don't quit either. Like, again, this is the fourth series in this playoffs in which they've had a pretty insurmountable deficit, and they've been able to, I guess for lack of a term, surmount it? If that's a term, well, they have overcome it. We're going to just put it that way, because in that series against the Bucks, I think that they were down 7 points with like 45 seconds remaining. Obviously, that game one against the New York Knicks was a big one as well, and then they had some sort of a deficit. I think that was an overtime against the Cleveland Cavaliers. They were down like 7 or 8 points. That had 45 seconds remaining, and while this comeback wasn't quite as big with regards to being like with 45 seconds remaining, because this was a little bit of a tighter game with more like 90 seconds remaining, this was still just an absolutely Herculean feat by the Indiana Pacers, and it's what they've been doing all postseason long. Like, all postseason long, all these guys have done is scrap, claw, and be able to find a way to be able to get the job done. They were down in this fourth quarter by a count of 15 points at one point, and then all of a sudden, they're able to just lead them, they're able to just weasel their way back. They're able to just find a way to be able to come back, and they were down at one point by a count of 9 points with less than 3 minutes remaining. Like, those are college basketball style comebacks when you have the team that's in the lead, like, going 5 of 10 at the free throw line, and you've got like Hassan French of St. Louis back in the day at the free throw line. So, I mean, that's what we are seeing right now from this Indiana Pacers team. Absolutely remarkable. Again, Obi Toppin, got to give that guy credit where it's due. Third straight game with double figures. He was able to put in there not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 threes for this Indiana Pacers team. And for the Pacers, getting that big shot from Tyrese Haliburton, who, again, he was very muted in terms of his scoring early on. He wasn't able to get a lot going, but he was giving you the rebounds. He was giving you the assists. He hits that big shot in the end to find a way to be able to get it done. And for the OKC Thunder, what are you going to be able to get out of guys not named Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? That becomes a big question. Are you going to be able to get a little bit more out of Isaiah Hartenstein off the bench? Are you going to be able to get a little bit more rebounding out of Chet Holmgren? Because while the Indiana Pacers lost that turnover battle, they won the rebound battle, and they won it big time by a count of 56-39. And for the Thunder, they shoot overall 40% from the floor. Should that go northward a little bit? Yes, and that's a bigger reason why I do think that you've got some value here on the over. Even though this went from what I was initially seeing at a 225.5 up to a 227.5, I do think that there's some value there, but minus 11, I'm even seeing now a minus 11.5 out there in the market as well. I think that this has just very much gone too far, and I do think that you're getting some value in game number two with the Pacers, and I do think that you're getting a little bit of value on the over, with this being anywhere between 226.5 to 227.5. What else provides you with a lot of value is the VSiN Morning Bets podcast. It is hosted by our team over here at VSiN, and it's your way to be able to get the first day's look at all of the betting lines, sharp action, market movement. It's all in just 15 minutes as well, so you get everything that you need to know to make smart wagers and stay out of line moves all before your morning coffee is gone. It's fast, focused, and built for bettors like you. Listen to the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or get it on the VSiN Watch app. It's the sharpest way to start your betting day. The VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast says, this is Cashing Out with myself, Greg Eeps Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. By the way, in terms of the other final, we're going to be addressing that in a few minutes. Zach Phillips, he does a tremendous job being able to gauge a great game of hockey. I know that he's based out there with regards to taking a look at all things with the Toronto Maple Leafs, as he does the Leafs Nation After Dark show / podcast. So we're going to be chatting with him, but I mean, man, we've had ourselves some really good games here over the last few nights. Game number one of the Stanley Cup Finals certainly delivered. Game number one here in the NBA Finals was certainly able to deliver as well. And I have to mention this as well. For those of you guys that are real sickos, you right now have the Houston Astros and the Pittsburgh Pirates doing battle in a game that it's in Pittsburgh. Like, this is not some sort of West Coast game or something like that that's happening right now in baseball. And really, that's a lone game in town as of right now. But you got the Astros up by a count of 4-2. This game is in the top of the sixth inning. This game had a remarkably long rain delay. Now, I think that the reason why they're trying to get in this game, and I was mentioning the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast, they must listen. I also do our baseball betting show here at the network as well. It's called the Baseball Betting Show. You're able to download that wherever you get your podcast. So we've got you guys covered every single game, every single day. That's up midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern. So I'm going to get off on this. I already did the podcast, so I mean, I'm not going to tell you that, oh, I'm going to just record the podcast, upload it, and it'll be there at midnight, because the podcast is more than an hour long, but I do that every single day. But right now for the Houston Astros, it's been Isak Paredes being able to fly the boom, 13th home run of the season. And typically when you get these like rain delayed games and everything like that, things move relatively fast. Not necessarily so much in this one. Like, this was a game that started just before 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern, or just before 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, Pacific time, more around about 6:50-ish, and I mean, you're about an hour and a half in, and right on the top of the sixth inning, so this game might be a little bit of a slog for you, and you have to wonder how much it's going to take out of these teams moving forward as well, because when you have a game like this, my gosh, I mean, it's just tiring, and I think that we saw a little bit of the residuals of that earlier today in baseball, because it has been a wild and crazy day in baseball. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, them coming back from down 6 runs, count them, 6, with 1 out, no men on in the top of the ninth. That shows you what happened there. And the reason why I bring that up is, I mean, I mentioned this rain delay. Keep in mind that the Braves versus Diamondbacks game closed up shop right around about midnight Eastern time yesterday. So when you do get these long rain delay games, the games that they play the next day, especially if they're dealing with some travel, in this case, you are not. But I mean, typically there's some harebrainedness. You might see some funkiness, and that's something that you always want to be noting, by the way. If you had the Atlanta Braves on the money line, guess who did? Yours truly behind the mic. So if you feel like you had a bad beat, don't worry. It happens to the best of us. And that's one that hopefully we don't take again, because that was not great to say the least. But we're certainly going to be diving on that. And I will say, if you're looking at the baseball card that we do have for Friday, there's quite a few games that are off the board. I don't know why, but there are just a lot of teams that have not settled on pitchers. A lot of the games that they were off the board, they're starting to come onto the board. But I mean, it's very interesting in that aspect, to say the least. And if you're looking at the Houston Astros, they have to actually travel after this game to Cleveland. Like, right now we're doing this at 11:24 p.m. Eastern time. This is not going to be getting done before 12:30, and then you have to board a flight, and then you have to travel. Now, I mean, it's not like you're going to be traveling for 15 hours going from Pittsburgh to Cleveland or anything like that, but you still have to travel. That game starts at 7:10 Eastern time, so it's not like it's a early game or anything like that. But very interesting, because I thought that you had good value on Cleveland to start with. This actually opened up with Cleveland Guardians being about -125 on the money line. Now it's -110. Like, this, the math is just not mathing here. Like, you've got a Houston Astros team that is going to be as tired as all heck. Like, I mean, let's relate it to just everyday life. Like, let's say that you're working at a job in lovely Las Vegas, like I'm doing right now. I'm going to be getting off of this show at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. And let's say that I have to board a plane and I need to do another show at like 7 o'clock a.m. in the great state of Wisconsin, which is where I'm from. Probably going to be a little bit tired for that show. I mean, imagine being a high-class athlete and you're going to be getting some great travel. You're going to be not flying, like, insert your favorite airline here. We're not going to disparage any of them, and I had quite a few that came to mind. You probably have yours as well, but that said, we are not going to disparage any airlines here, but I mean, you're going to get good travel. But I mean, still, that is an absolutely brutal turnaround for them, and I mean, it's going to be an interesting turnaround with regards to game number one to game number two in the Stanley Cup final. As we had ourselves a great Stanley Cup final game one here in the NBA finals, it was absolutely magical what we saw at the Indiana Pacers. And coming up next, how about if we do take a look at game number two, what we're going to be getting out there in Edmonton, as we're going to be joined next by a man that does a tremendous job covering this great game of hockey, Zach Phillips, right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Cashing Out, I'm Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be joined by this man on the Progressive Guest Line. We've got Zach Phillips aboard. He does a tremendous job with the Leafs Nation After Dark show. I know that he's been doing an amazing job covering everything with regards to the NHL postseason. And Zach, it's great to get you aboard. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Zach. And Zach, first things first, what did you all see in game number one? Because with regards to game number one of this cup final between the Oilers and also the Panthers, I thought it was just great gameplay in general. And this just has the feel of a series that is going a minimum 6 games, if not 7.
Yeah, I mean, from the entertainment standpoint alone, I would like 7. I will take that every day. Just to be able to watch these two teams go back and forth, the rematch that we're seeing here as well. And then the quality of hockey, which I think that we gain from them having that week off leading into this. I mean, I'll take it every single day of the week. But I think the one thing that we saw, which was interesting, was from Florida's side, we saw them play Florida Panthers hockey for the most part. But what was very different about the Oilers was there was not that same level of maybe nerves or intimidation that I think they experienced last year, which just kind of makes this a whole lot more intriguing as it goes throughout, because it kind of feels like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, okay, yeah, this is over. Like, the Oilers, they know how to bounce back, because the Panthers are a formidable opponent on the other side. Obviously, third straight Stanley Cup, and they won last year. But it's just interesting to see Edmonton have a response for things that I don't think they had last year.
Yep, I agree with you. I think that having that experience of being in the Cup Final last year is paying a lot of dividends for them. And in terms of game number two, how big of a deal is it that the game number one game went to overtime, and not just went to overtime, but it went nearly a full 20 minutes in overtime? Because I do tend to think, even though you have the day off here today on Thursday, that there might be some residual effects and a little bit of fatigue for game number two.
I would say to an extent, yes, but a couple of the things that would make me feel not as inclined to say like this is going to play such a big factor. The travel between Edmonton and Florida is obviously significant. That's why there was that extra buffer period between the end of the conference finals going into the Cup finals here. You got to allow for media members and everybody to get there and get across. From one city to the other, you got to adjust for time zones, et cetera. And I think the NHL, as well as the NBA here, we noticed as well, as put an emphasis on making sure that the finals, there's a rest period and a buildup, so that going in, they're at least better prepared than they have been in years past, where we've seen a quicker turnaround. So I think that helps things. I mean, I said it there, both teams had that extended time off going into this that we don't traditionally see. The other thing that I would kind of say here as well to note, when you're talking about them going into OT and playing that extra 20, McDavid and Dreisaitl played, I believe it was just over 30 minutes each there. There was a couple defensemen on the Florida side who had played over 30 minutes as well. Neither of these teams are strangers to having that happen. And Edmonton specifically, so maybe if we do look at rest and how they'll adjust to it, Edmonton specifically and those two guys, McDavid and Dreisaitl, there might not be two players in the NHL who are more accustomed to having to carry a heavier workload in a 60-minute game, Greg. Not just going to OT, a 60-minute game where we've seen Chris Knobloch, Jay Woodcroft, coaches of the past, have to lean on them a little bit extra to tie things up, send it to OT, win, whatever it may be. So, I mean, you just look at the workload that they've faced in their past seasons, in the regular season this year. I look at that one, it doesn't feel like they did anything above and beyond what they're used to. And I mean, on that Florida side, the other thing too, I would just point out with that minute, the extra minutes that they played, is that's one of those teams who they don't play crazy fast hockey, but you could tell that they are physically conditioned and able to go in a speed game, a physical game, whatever. Like, they are well equipped to go the distance in any of these series.
I think that it's going to be so much fun to see what we get in this series. And well pointed out by you, as Zach Phillips, he does an amazing job covering the great game of hockey. And he also does Leafs Nation After Dark. He's joining me right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And the big takeaway from game number one was the fact that it was a man that you just mentioned there in passing, Leon Dreisaitl, who got the job done. He got the final goal to be able to get that win for Edmonton. And I know you're taking a look at him for this series with regards to perhaps being able to win the Conn Smythe Trophy. A lot of places have them right around that neighborhood, about plus 450, give or take a little bit. Take me through this one, because with Connor McDavid, he's obviously the odds-on favorite, and I do think that it's going to tug at the heartstrings a little bit for the voters to be able to give him that Conn Smythe Trophy, because when he celebrated last year, he was not out there on the ice for it. But with Dreisaitl, having that signature moment, I thought was massive in game number one.
Yeah, and he scores not just the OT winner, he scores two in that one. He scores 66 seconds into the game on home ice to open up the Cup final. Look, I'll be honest with you. Do I think Dreisaitl wins this? No, because I think McDavid wins it if the Oilers do. But more so what I'm looking at is the numbers you point out there are seeing plus 450s out to plus 500s on some shops. Like, I just think it should be a little bit closer than what it is, because if you were to hand out the Conn Smythe today after game one, and say who's been the best player for the playoffs, or who's the guy who's going to win this. Remember, it's a voted on award too. It's not stats and numbers that they're pointing at. Those are part of it, but it's a storyline. It's Connor McDavid. But I just keep looking at Game one, Draisaitl, two goals, OT winner. I believe it's the third OT winner in the playoffs here now. You look at the points and where they're at there. He's 1 point behind Connor McDavid in playoff points. McDavid has 28. Draisaitl's right behind him at 27 there. There's no reason that Leon Draisaitl can't surpass Connor McDavid in points in the play in the cup final here in the next however many games it may take. Part of it I look at, and I know this will play a factor, but who's the matchup that McDavid's going up against? 9 times out of 10, it's against the Sasha Barkov line, which is going to be very difficult for them to find ways to get on the score sheet. They're very impactful still. Connor McDavid's good enough to find ways to do it, but that opens things up a little bit more for Leon Draisaitl to be able to get some of those points. And if he can open up a lead, take a lead, whatever, I think it kind of starts to tilt things where you're like, Draisaitl did have that. Draisaitl did lead the playoffs. He did lead the series, whatever you may want to look at it. So I think it opens things up. So more so the way I'm looking at it is just like, I think there's a better chance than plus 450 or 5-1 for him to get it. Look, the other thing too here, and quite honestly, he was their best player all season long. And I think everybody right now is kind of aware of the fact that he was, and it's not a knock on McDavid. Like, saying that Draisaitl was their best player is not saying, wow, Connor McDavid wasn't very good this year. He was unbelievable. But Draisaitl was just that good. And I think building off of that season, having the points that he does right now, I don't know. I feel like it should be a little bit closer than what it's currently sitting at. I think I saw earlier today, McDavid was at like minus 115, minus 120, minus 122s out there to win the Conn Smythe. I just think it should be a little bit tighter, Greg.
Yep, I agree with you with the way that Draisaitl was able to put in that game winner. I think that that was massive. And personally, if the Florida Panthers are able to win it as well, Sam Bennett, I still think, has a little bit of value as well. And with regards to just game number two specifically, right now we're seeing that goal total at 6.5. The Oilers, very slight, like minus 120, minus 125 favorites. How do you decide for this one? And how do you take a look at what we're going to be getting in game number two?
I expect a big pushback from the Panthers, which is a weird thing to say when you consider that it went to overtime and it dwindled down to the final minutes of the first overtime, and it was a power play goal that got it done. But if you were watching that game, I mean, majority of the overtime and basically that entire third period, I would even say extending into kind of late second period, it felt like the Oilers were in control. And I don't know if you remember back to last year, the first game of the series, the first two games specifically, the Oilers kind of took it to the Panthers, and they got away from that one with two wins because Bob stood on his head. Bob didn't have a stand on his head game last night. And specifically, you look at the second goal that the Oilers scored, I think he would like that one back. I think that's not a typical goal that gets by Sergei Bobrovsky, especially in the playoffs. And I mean, even looking at the final last year, back to then, like that's not a goal that gets by him. And it seems like one of those ones that kind of sticks with him. And you saw how he played throughout the rest of the game last night. He kind of started to turn into goalie Bob, Conn Smythe kind of guy again, where it was like, I'm not going to be beat. He obviously did allow the game tying goal and the overtime winner. But on those, like, I don't walk away saying, wow, Bob should have had that. He should have made those saves. So I think Bobrovsky has a better game in the next one. And I think there's a message sent in that room from Paul Maurice kind of saying, you know, like it's a little cliche, but I get the feeling that he kind of looks around in that room and he goes, guys, it's not the same Oilers team as last year. We can't give them these whoopsies. We can't give them these opportunities. We don't want to go back to Florida down 0-2.
Not at all. Absolutely. Zach Phillips does a great job on the NHL front. And coming up next, let's talk some baseball. I'll cash it out on Visa.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out. I'm VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. It was great to be able to talk some hockey in that last segment with Zach Phillips. He does a tremendous job being able to gauge the sport with Leafs Nation After Dark. So it was great to be able to decipher that. And We've got a lot to decipher right now in terms of playoff hockey, playoff basketball, as well as we've been seeing the odds move quite a bit in terms of this game number two game between the Pacers and the Thunder. Obviously, just a rambunctious game number one with the Indiana Pacers finding a way to be able to claw back from down 14 points in the fourth quarter. They win that game 111-110, and now in terms of game number two, it's a total that continues to tick up more and more. That initial DraftKings opener that I was seeing on the total was a 225.5. Now we're seeing as low as a 227, as high as a 228. And with the OKC Thunder, they're up to being between 11 to 11.5 point favorites. And again, I just can't unsee what we just saw in game number one. The OKC Thunder won a game outright, at which they lost a turnover battle by 18. And now we're saying that they're an 11 to 11.5 point underdog. Recognize that the OKC Thunder have been a wagon this year. Recognize that they've been very dominant. You're going to be willing to give me 11 to 11.5 points in a game of these stakes with an Indiana Pacers team that has come back in this way throughout the playoffs. Yep, they're making me the godfather offer that I can't refuse. And I do think that there's going to be more scoring as well, because on top of the turnovers they had for the Indiana Pacers, the OKC Thunder shot less than 40% from the floor. That should be ticking northward up. And I do think that with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's going to continue to do a rock-solid job for the team, but I think that he's going to get a little bit more help from his friends. I was looking at quite a few more unders in terms of game number one, in terms of a lot of the player props. I think that this could be a game where you do find a few more overs. Now, I do think that it actually could be a little bit of reversal in this game as well, because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, very big game. He was able to have 38 points, and now his player prop, once again, is 34.5 here in game number two. I think that you're going to see some of these guys be able to step up. Like, you did see Lu Dort have 15 points in game number one. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be lasting. I would look at a guy like a Kasan Walls to be able to go over 7.5 points. I think that there might be a little bit of value there. And then with Obi Toppin, I mean, it has been absolutely remarkable what we've seen out of him. His player prop is at 10. I don't know if he quite continues it. I do think that there might be a little bit of regression with him, but the guy that I really do highlight is Aaron Nesmith. He's been able to come up very big here in the postseason. His player prop is right now at 12 points, and I do think that there's a good chance that he goes over. And additionally, I do think that for the OKC Thunder, they have to realize that they can do a little bit more down low than what they did in game number one. Miles Turner had been pretty pedestrian in that series against the New York Knicks. He had himself actually a very big game here in game number one. I think that this could be a classic Chet Holmgren sort of game, as his player prop is right now at 16 with regards to scoring. His rebound props is at 10. You're able to get plus money there. I honestly would be taking a look at that, because I do think that if the OKC Thunder are going to be able to cover this game, they're going to need a big game from Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein. I think that they're probably going to give him a few more minutes as well. But again, 11 to 11.5 points is where you're finding the spread on the Pacers after they win game one outright on the money line. That just seems like a little bit of disrespect in my opinion, and I do think that the Pacers are presenting some good value here. And what else is presenting value is, I always make the joke that when all sports end for the end of the night, it's like, man, we could really use a college basketball game in Hawaii. Well, they're playing this Astros versus Pittsburgh Pirates game as if it is on Hawaiian time. Right now, you're in the bottom of the seventh inning. It's 6-2. This game, again, is going down out there on the East Coast, and I was mentioning in the last segment, you've got the Houston Astros having to travel on the road to play against the Cleveland Guardians, and I like the Guardians to start with. Like, I mean, this is going to be a classic battle between two guys that, well, haven't necessarily had the world's greatest seasons with regards to starting pitching matchup, as you've got one Mr. Colton Gordon who's going to be on the bump for Houston, and Logan Allen is going for Cleveland, and the Cleveland Guardians opened up at a minus 125 on the money line. As this rain delay went further and further, their number has actually gotten more and more fair. Now you're going to be able to get the Guardians more around about a minus 108 to a minus 115. That total is 8.5 shaded down to the under. And yeah, I'm going to be willing to take a shot here on Cleveland. I was going to be willing to take a shot on them to begin with. And this was actually one of the games that made my VSiN write-ups. I feel all the better. The fact that this Houston Astros team is going to be as tired as all heck gets with regards to a turnaround. Now, again, going from the city of Pittsburgh to Cleveland, it's not like you're going to be having like 5 hours of travel or anything like that. But still, these guys are not going to be leaving the ballpark anytime before 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. Typically, these guys have media availabilities. You have to shower up and everything like that. So they're probably not going to be hitting the air much before 1:30 a.m. might be a little bit later than that. You then land in Cleveland. You have to get to your hotel and everything like that. You have to do your normal human things. And yeah, it's going to be a very, very long night for these guys. And hopefully Colton Gordon is getting a nap right now in the clubhouse to be able to prepare for what he's going to be facing on Friday. So that's very interesting to say the least, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Eubes-Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And speaking of Cleveland, the Browns are going to be looking to rise up this season. And if you want to bet smarter on the NFL and on football in general this year, you want to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And if you sign up for a VSiN Pro subscription right now, you're going to be able to get yourself a tremendous offer, because typically you charge $20 a month, and we're going to save you $41 off of that by going for the full year with our VSiN Pro subscription. But on top of that, you're going to get a free pre-ordering of the NFL Sharp Betting Guide playbook by Josh Applebaum, who does just such amazing work here at the network. It's a no-nonsense guide to reading the market and spotting sharp action, making smarter NFL bets, and so much more. Sign up now, and you're able to get instant access to everything that we do here at the network. A daily best bet email with all the bets from our VSiN shows and guests. Real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa. 24/7 video access to the VSiN Watch app. Plus our 2025-2026 NFL betting guide. That's going to be dropping in about 4 weeks on July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and the promo code to be able to claim this offer. Book B-O-O-K over at VSIN.com/subscribe. As it is cashing out with myself, Greg Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And with regards to that Astros versus Guardians game, if you are looking at that total of 8.5, by the way, I do like that total to the under, as well as you take a look at this Houston Astros team, and I have to figure that someone might be getting the day off on Friday, because, man, this is a pretty old team to start with the likes of Jose Altuve and company. Now, Jeremy Pena has been able to have a really nice year. Pena has been able to do a nice job being able to give you 9 home runs, entering into the site, hitting for about a .300. And for Altuve, he's starting to rise up a little bit more, and he's been able to give you about a .265 overall for the season, but it's been hit or miss with regards to power numbers for the team. Like, they had to give Mr. Jacob Melton a little bit of start here tonight, so you can tell that there was a little bit of suspectness there. Mauricio Dubon has been able to move the line, but he doesn't have to give you a lot of power, and Yennier Diaz continues to give you a .264 on base. Now, with the Cleveland Guardians, this is a little bit of top-heavy lineup, which is a big reason why I do like his to the under. Cleveland just has not yielded a lot of scoring over the last few seasons. It's one of the better pitchers' ballparks, in my opinion, in all of baseball. Like, you look at this Guardians team, they're averaging about 3.6 runs per game at home, a little bit north of 4.3 runs per game away from home, and you do have Kyle Manzardo, who's been able to give you a double figure round of homers. He's hitting right around about a .210, though. And then additionally, you've been able to have Jose Ramirez be very rock solid for the team. He and Steven Kwan have both been able to hit above a .300. And for Ramirez, he's up to 11 home runs this season. But still, you've got a lot of these guys that have just been struggling towards the bottom of the fold. Big Christmas, John Kenzie Noel. You've got Bo Naylor, Will Wilson. These guys only below a .200. And then they had to send Brian Rocchio down to the minor league level because he just simply was not cutting it. So that's an issue. Now, the good news is they're getting David Fry back in the fold. He was such a big hitter for the team during the year last year. I still remember the clutch home run that he hit against the Detroit Tigers in the postseason. So that should be able to help out this lineup a little bit. But still, even with him back, this is a little bit of a top-heavy lineup. And for both of these teams, the bullpens are interesting. That's really the saving grace for the Houston Astros. Their bullpen has been rock solid. And right now you've got a game in the bottom of the seventh inning, two outs there. So you've got Framber Valdez trying to be able to get through a full seven. He's going to, at the very least, give you 6 2/3. That's big when you've got the likes of a Bennett Sosa, who's been able to give you a sub-275 ERA for this bunch. Brian Ray, who's been rock solid. Josh Hader is starting to look like the Josh Hader of old. So that bullpen is really firing all cylinders. And then for the Cleveland Guardians, it just has not been the same bullpen that we saw from a season ago. They let go of a few guys, and they were banking on Paul Sewald helping out, and Paul Sewald is currently on the injury list. And banking on Paul Sewald, not necessarily what you want to do. Emmanuel Clase has had a big giant fall off, has looked a little bit better here recently, but still been a bit less than savory from he and Tim Aaron, hovering right around about .380 with regards to their ERAs. Hunter Gaddis has been amazing. He's been able to give you a sub-150 ERA. You've had Cade Smith do a solid job holding down the fort, and for Cade Smith, right around about 14 punch-outs per 9 innings, so very dominant on that front. But Jacob Junis, he's had his issues. You've had a few of these other guys like Nick Enright be up, down, all around. And I do think that in this circumstance, you're getting some very good value with the Guardians. Like, even before the super long rain delay, I had the Guardians at a minus 139 on the money line. Recognize that Logan Allen is not too much of a strikeout artist. He's only getting about 7 strikeouts per 9 innings and needs to keep the walks down. He's giving up about 4 walks per 9 innings, but I think that he goes out there, gets a job done. And Colton Gordon should be experiencing some positivity for the Astros. 5.95 ERA, feeling independent more than a full point and a half lower than that. So at the 8.5, I like the under. I do like the Guardians on the money line. And coming up next, how about if we unpack what we saw in game number one of the NBA Finals, look at game two, and look at some Friday baseball right here on Cashin' Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.